If you've been living with an aching back, debilitating imbalances, or any physical discomfort and just want to get back to living a fit and happy life, look no further than In Motion Fitness Center and Outpatient Therapy at Fairview Haven in Fairbury, Illinois. Our highly skilled therapy team will guide you through proven and effective exercises to help you regain your strength, movement, and mobility, all with our renowned level of love and care. Live your best life. Call our therapy team at 815-692-6724. To find out how we can serve you today. Choosing insurance can be complicated and daunting. That's why you need to call Pam Deaton with Health Markets. Pam will help you with all of your insurance needs, including health, life, vision, dental, and disability insurance. She's consistently been one of Health Markets' top national agents over the years and continues to earn great reviews from her clients. If you or a loved one needs to find the right insurance plan, you're in the right hands with Pam. Call her at 309-287-2518 to see how she can help you today. Fairbury Furniture in Fairbury, Illinois has added over 7,000 square feet to their showroom, and that means more selection for you. Why wait for your furniture? You can buy anything on the showroom floor and take it home today. So hop in the car and take the short drive to Fairbury Furniture, where customers love their selection, pricing, and their take-it-home-today power. So many Bloomington Normal residents have made Fairbury Furniture their favorite furniture store, just 26 minutes away in downtown Fairbury.
Hurry down to Fairbury Furniture, where the furniture rocks.
I love pizza, especially pizza from Marcelloni's Pizza in Fairbury, Illinois. Experience Marcelloni's Pizza and their famous cheese nuggets for an amazing price when you order today. If you call them up at 815-692-4602, between 4 and 5 p.m. and order a pizza, you will get the second pizza of equal or lesser value for free. Restrictions apply. You can even pick up that order after the 4 to 5 p.m. window and still get that happy hour discount. As a pizza connoisseur myself, I will proudly say that my favorite barbecue chicken pizza is from Marcelloni's, so check them out. 815-692-4602. Pick it up at 405 East Locust Street in Fairbury. They're open 7 days a week from 4 to 9 p.m.
I've had people in parts of my life, they've said that, like, you're ugly or you're stupid or, you know, you're worthless. And for a while I would tell myself those things and I'd believe it. But I can't just say, well, okay, well, people call me ugly, so I can never be good looking then, or I can never be smart because somebody said I was stupid. Like, I'm determined to prove people wrong in that way. But I think besides the point, I think that we can use our thoughts to make ourselves physically healthy. Like, because if you think about it, your thoughts can make you physically ill. Like, if you get really anxious, you can have stomach ulcers. It's not uncommon for stress to cause poor health. I think it makes sense to say that it can also cause good health.
That's a great point.
Yeah. And I think, like, an example of this would be there was a chiropractor. His name is David Espenza, I believe. And he was in a triathlon, and he was coming around a corner on his bike, and he got hit by a car in such a way that he flew forward, and his spine compressed really hard on the concrete, and it fractured a couple of his vertebrae, and he was pretty much told he would never walk again. And you know, he was a chiropractor, so he had a lot of expertise in the spinal cord, of course, and so he would sit there and just meditate and imagine himself aligning his spine again. Like, doctors said he would never walk again, and 3 months later he's already training for the next triathlon. Like, his spine had fully healed. Just every day he would sit there and meditate on that, and eventually it just, over time, it got easier. Like, a couple weeks would pass by and something would get a little easier, a couple more weeks pass by, it gets a little easier at a time. Eventually, till 3 months or so passed by, like I said, and he was already training again.
Wow. So it wasn't the drugs, it wasn't some majorly invasive surgery, it wasn't something like that. No. It was his mind, just literally. What was he doing? Do you know what he was doing in that meditation that allowed him to regain his function? His spinal health, I guess. Just make him walk again. That's what happened.
Well, the doctor even said, like, I don't know how that's possible. Like, I mean, I guess I don't fully understand it, because this, I guess I shouldn't say you can heal yourself based on one person who did it with their thoughts one time. But I think it's certainly worth looking at that anomaly and saying, okay, is this possible? Like, and I think that, honestly, I think I don't know enough about it, besides that he said that he just kind of sat there and imagined himself realigning his spine, and he meditated on, you know, imagining himself in his next triathlon and just not letting this define him, pretty much.
Yeah. Well, I've heard a very similar story elsewhere in some other documentary. I remember someone telling me all about this, and they were a really big person with the brain, and they said that this man was actually paralyzed from, it was like, I think he had strokes maybe or something, and he was paralyzed in his left arm and left leg, and so he couldn't do much of anything. And his sons were two neurosurgeons, and they made him sit there and send the signal to his hand. Mm-hmm. It's like you think of a kink in a hose, right? And the water's just not getting through that kink. It's not getting to the spout, and it's not blowing the water out. The signal's not getting through. Mm-hmm. Much like sending a signal to your nerves, through your nerves, into your hand to open your hand. Mm-hmm. There's just something's not clicking. Either it's a break in the nervous system, or it's an impairment with the region of your brain that's responsible for sending said signal. Mm. If you keep trying to send it, the theory is that it, like a kinked hose, if you turn up the water pressure for hard enough for long enough, that it will eventually break through. Mm. No pun intended, because breakthrough is kind of like this transcendent term used for people who meditate, and they just all of a sudden they get it. They understand life. They have a broader concept on how it all works together. But anyway, it will break through is the theory eventually. And with persistence and everything like that. And anyway, there was another story of this man who was paralyzed in these areas of his body. His sons made him send the signal, and they also made him try to get up. Mm-hmm. They'd lay him on the ground and said, all right, try to get up, and they wouldn't help him. Mm-hmm. And I've done this with my mom. She hates it, but it helps.
I've seen you do that before, yeah. It's hard, but it's like, it is for her best interest, you know, to at least try.
Right, yeah. It's like, keep trying, because that your brain knows you're trying, and so it's trying, because your brain is you. Mm. So if you're trying to send that signal, your brain's going to try to figure it out, because your brain kind of operates independently of your thoughts. You can't quite control it. So while you're thinking and trying to make a thing happen, your brain's actually doing the wiring. It's doing the stuff on the back end to make it happen, you know. So anyway, this man regained function, which you would think is a miracle, but it was a product of his mind.
This is the guy with his arm wouldn't work. Okay.
Yeah, and he regained that function. They thought he would be in wheelchair bound for life, because you can't regain function of a part of your body that was paralyzed from the stroke. It just that part of your brain is dead. Mm-hmm. And these parts of his brain were dead. And other regions of his brain
picked up the slack.
They took on double duty, and they took on that role, because your brain is plastic, which means different regions can compensate for other regions losing function. It's plastic. We can switch roles, basically. I don't know why it's called plastic, but it's
like, it's,
it can do that.
It's adaptable.
Exactly. Yeah. It sounds like woo science a little bit to say, with your mind, you can change your body, you can get healthy, you can regain function of formerly paralyzed limbs, you can even cure your own mental health through positive thinking. Like, is that what you're saying?
It almost sounds too good to be true, but like, we've seen a couple of cases like that where people have literally healed just by, it seems to be, just believing hard enough that they will heal. Like, what was that study you were telling me earlier about? Like, it was about placebo, and there was like people who were gluten.
Yeah, you let me tell it. Yeah. I'll tell it. Okay, so here's the study. Basically, I was kind of say a little bit of it to the camera. I wish I knew. It's a credible study. I just wish I knew which university did it and which journal it was published in. It might have been published in like a blue ribbon journal, which is Cell, Nature, and Science, I think. These are like big time journals. If you're in there, it's a good study, basically. Peer reviewed extensively, blah, blah, blah. I don't know. I didn't graduate college. I didn't look at let alone in a scientific field. But anyway, there was a good number of people, participants in the study, and I'm going to say there was 100. So that's not a gigantic study, but that's 50 and 50. 50 self-reported people that had a gluten intolerance, a notable gluten intolerance, not just a little bit, but a real one, and 50 people that did not. And they gave them all 100 people, the same meal. It was a big, nutritious dinner, probably with some steak, potatoes, and something else. I don't know. And they all ate meat, but half were gluten intolerant. And they said, okay, this meal has gluten, of course. Go ahead and eat it. We're going to observe the side effects. And 100% of the people with the gluten intolerance reported having insane bowel pain. They had diarrhea. They had a lot of diarrhea. They had, you know, throwing up, stomach pains like crazy. Typical hard, harsh pains that come with the gluten intolerance and then ingesting gluten. Well, what they told all 100 of these people is that meal you ate was 100% gluten-free. The feelings they had, though, the feelings that those gluten intolerant people had were absolutely real. Physiologically, they were real. If you could measure all the neurochemicals that are associated with pain that they would feel typically in a gluten reaction, they really happened, despite there not being any real gluten, which goes to show that believing that there was gluten and believing that you have a serious adverse reaction to gluten is enough to make you have an adverse reaction even if gluten's not there. That is the power of the mind. That is the power of the mind. That's incredible.
And I think there's other things too we're learning about that food can possibly do in psychology. We were talking about that Humerbin Lab podcast where the psychiatrist, he mentioned there was a study.
And real quick, for people that don't know, the Humerbin Lab podcast is a sensational podcast in the scientific community. Andrew Humerbin is a professor of neurobiology and ophthalmology. He owns and runs a lab at Stanford University, teaches at Stanford University School of Medicine. And this psychiatrist we're talking about is a psychiatrist and world-renowned psychiatrist from Harvard University, just to give people a little context, but please continue.
And to add even a little more context, he's not just a psychiatrist who would see somebody who just had their first manic episode. He's the type of psychiatrist who sees people who have had decades of psychotherapy, decades of going through pretty much every medicine you can try for their mental disorders. And they had to have gone through 6 different psychiatrists before they saw him.
He's like the last resort, the expert that you need if everything fails. He's a failed treatment psychiatrist, I think is what they're called.
Yes, and he had this patient with schizophrenia. The patient was taking antipsychotics, which for some people are known to cause them to gain weight. And he was weighing about 340 pounds, I believe. And so he said, okay, we're going to try you on the keto diet. And he's like, okay, let's do it. And a couple months go by, and he comes in and tells the psychiatrist, like, hey, you know those voices, like I've been saying that I hear all the time? Like, they're kind of starting to go away. And, you know, those paranoid delusions I was having, like, I really don't believe any of that's true. And I think maybe I actually was schizophrenic, but I just didn't see it until now. And the psychiatrist he put him on the keto diet, and then he made sure he was following it by measuring the amount of ketones that were in his blood every, I think he gave him like a little monitor that would record it, and then he'd have to show it to the psychiatrist every time he went to make sure that he was staying within a certain range of ketones in his blood. But I mean, this guy's schizophrenia completely was gone.
Right.
And the only thing that he changed, I mean, he's still taking his medication. He never stopped taking his medication. They didn't change the medication. The only thing that changed was he started the keto diet. That's the only variable that was changed there.
So you know it was the keto diet that did the thing.
Yes, I believe it was.
And later in the episode, throughout the whole episode, this guy talks about the mitochondrial function and how keto comes into play there, and it really makes something happen that's amazing. And keto's not the cure for everything in the world,
no.
But he's saying that he thinks it might be a huge symptom reliever, not even symptom reliever, but it might be a humongous, better than any medication, a remedy for mental disorders.
Mm-hmm. And he also mentioned a study later in the podcast where I believe it was done in a in a hospital in London where they had these patients try the keto diet, and there was I believe there was like 30 of them. 10% of them dropped out right away. So we're at like 26, 27 people left. And what ended up happening was 50% of them, the mental disorders that they had remissed. And these are people who have schizophrenia, they're bipolar, and they have OCD. Like, these are extreme patients who have been trying, you know, medications for decades, all that stuff, going through psychotherapy. And I believe about 35%, they were able to, like, either lower their medication or stop it completely. And then 15%, it just didn't work at all.
Wow. That's so unbelievable. And 15%, you know, it's not – that's – those numbers are insanely good, better than any medication ever could be. You look at, like – what are the typical depression big time medications? Is it Prozac? Is it Zoloft?
I think Prozac. I think Zoloft's an antidepressant, if I'm not mistaken. But I know Prozac's one of the most prescribed medications in the world.
Mm-hmm. And these are serious medications. They're addictive, even. They're powerful, but you look at their efficacy compared to drugs that you can get over the counter, like 5-HTP, which is a precursor to serotonin, which people think is the big thing that they want, but like, it's maybe not necessarily. And what do I know about this? But I've listened to hours and hours and hours, hundreds of hours on this subject. And you compare the efficacy at just how effective these serious Prozac things are compared to this little thing that I've gotten over the counter at Walmart.
Mm.
And they're about the same.
Mm.
They're about the same. That should make some alarm bells go off in your head. Mm. Are these things really that beneficial? And then you look at it, and how effective are they? It's like 30% of the time people report alleviated symptoms, mm-hmm. and increased mood. Man, you do better than you can do better than that with placebo.
Mm-hmm. But that's also,
and apparently the keto diet too.
Yeah, and I do think it's important to say, though, even though we've mentioned these couple of things have worked for a couple people, medication does work. It just, I'm wondering if maybe there's something that could work better, and that would be better for you.
Hmm. You said medication does work, but certainly doesn't all the time.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, maybe more often than not, it doesn't. Depending on the illness, of course, I'm saying this gigantic, this general statement here, which people could rebuke all day long.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that the majority of people that get a doctor-prescribed antidepressant report that it does not alleviate the symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
Much at all or at all.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's correct. But what do you think, Tristan Garland? You are the guy studying psychology. You've had some real life experience with this. So what do you think about antidepressant drugs?
Well, when I started taking medication, I was put on Lexapro, which I believe is an antidepressant. And I found that it reduced my symptoms mildly. Like, I could sleep again. That was a big thing. Like, I could sleep again. My hygiene was better. But I still didn't, like, I was still sad. I just felt like my symptoms had been mildly alleviated. But I also think it's worth noting that you can, like, some medications might not work for you. Like, you can always, there's lots of different antidepressants you could try, but certainly you don't want to just med hop, but I feel like if medication is right for you, there's something that you could find that could work for you, I think.
Uh-huh. You're not supposed to ever quit medications for the mind cold turkey either, right? Or for anything for that matter. You're not supposed to quit it cold turkey.
Yeah, because your body adapts in a way that it's just used to having it in the system. Like, I believe even the psychiatrist said, like, people who... The psychiatrist from the Huberman Lab podcast, he said...
Which his name is Dr. Chris Palmer, MD.
Dr. Chris Palmer.
Yes, from Harvard psychiatrist, assistant professor at Harvard University, a board-certified doctor, incredible guy, wealth of knowledge, has an incredible story of his own. Episode 99 of the Huberman Lab podcast. It's a must listen, but sorry to continue.
No, that's okay. I do believe he even said, though, like, patients who stop... like antipsychotics, they can, in some severe cases, even die. Like, but most of the time, it's like, well, not most of the time, but sometimes people can even have seizures or manic episodes can be triggered because of that. If they just stop taking all of a sudden cold turkey, like you said. So yeah, it's not good to take those. Personally, when I had antidepressants, I've never felt addicted to them. I guess I never felt addicted to antipsychotics either. But and I never had withdrawal effects when I went off Lexapro, and I also took fluoxetine, and I went off that. I went off both of them cold turkey, and I never had any withdrawal. I know I shouldn't have, but
well, that it just makes you wonder of the efficacy of them in the first place. If there's no withdrawal symptoms. Because they say don't go off of stuff cold turkey, especially psychiatric medication, because it's like there was a weak floor and it was starting to dip in your brain and you could feel it.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, you're lacking in a department that's really responsible for your quality of life. Mm-hmm. So you put this medication supposed to act as like a weight-bearing beam. Mm-hmm. And you think of your basement or something and the ceiling's starting to sag. Your house does not have the support that it needs to keep functioning. You put a weight-bearing beam right in the center of the room and it holds that thing up. And then you continue to build the rest of the house around that thing, right? Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, goodbye. You're not chipping away at this little beam and hoping that the place still stays standing, and maybe it will somehow. Mm-hmm. You know, our brain's different than the house. Other things will adapt as you slowly start to taper off of that beam. Mm-hmm. But if you just remove the beam, everything will come crashing down is kind of the theory there. And if your stuff did not come crashing down, you wonder if that thing even acted as a weight-bearing beam in the first place.
Yeah, and I have seen a lot of doubts about the efficacy specifically of antidepressants. And I can see why. I mean, like you said, I think you said it has a 30% efficacy rate or something from
something like that.
Yeah. Which is, I mean, that's still, you know, that's almost a third of people. That's a lot. But still, it's not ideal, I don't think, if it's only 30%.
Right. You could do a million other things that would probably get you a better rate of success. And I should mention, I can't even pull out where I got that from exactly, but I've listened to a lot of this Huberman Lab podcast. I listen to a lot of, you know, Dr. Jordan Peterson's throwing out numbers all the time. So I'm pretty sure this number is accurate and it comes from a quality source. That said, though, yeah, I think there's a lot of other things you could do that would have a much better success rate. And I want to ask you, what do you think could have some of the best success rates for people struggling with mental illness? Because it is running rampant in our society. So many people have mental illness.
Well, I think the first two things I would say right away are you should be exercising and you shouldn't be using drugs or alcohol, I don't think. I mean, they don't really give you any benefits. I'm talking about like hard drugs and stuff like... obviously not psychiatric medications, but I think exercising is like one of the biggest things because it's very humbling and it's painful, and I feel like we go through our lives a lot and we don't really have to face that many difficult challenges. To be honest, like I mean every day. Like difficult challenges, like day to day, and I feel like it's a good reminder that pain is a good thing. Like it helps you grow. I mean, you're not going to grow without any sort of failure or suffering along the way. That's like the precursor for growth.
Right. So, is a little bit of discomfort.
Yes. Yeah. And pain and failure, I think. You know, because it shows you where you don't want to be at. Like, when you go work out, when you're first starting, like, it sucks. You're sore and you're not big. Obviously, you want to be, like, strong. And, but it reminds you where you're at. And you're not there yet. And, I think that's a big thing, is exercising is one of the main things. I think,
And you used to be a very, very fit guy. You are a fit guy. I mean, you used to be alarmingly fit. Well, you just met, it looked like you were obsessed with working out.
Mm-hmm.
Just curious, was that a good time in your life compared to the other times? Were you happy when you were doing that? Or did working out have a positive effect on you?
It made me happy because it showed me, kind of going back to what I said earlier, like people call me ugly and whatnot, it shows me that, okay, I can manipulate my figure if I work hard enough at it and I believe hard enough in myself. I can change. I can become what I want to become. Like, I wanted to be strong. I became strong. If I wanted to get lean, I can do it. And I'm sorry, what was the question again? I just went off.
Kind of pulled you off because you were thinking about something. You're talking about the first thing you would do if you're mentally ill, and you're talking to the people that maybe are mentally ill, and they're in a rough place in their life. Maybe it's even people that are especially young.
Mm.
And you said the first thing you would do is work out. You talk about the benefits of working out, and you went on to say that they can teach you hard work pays off. Mm. It can teach you that you can manipulate your body. You can shape your life, maybe.
Mm.
It shows you that you can shape your life, your body, which means that maybe you can also shape your life. Mm. It teaches you so many good things. Does that jog your memory at all of what you were going to say?
My question, what was your question? The first question you asked, I'm sorry.
It was...
What do I recommend, I guess?
Well, no. But then I went on to say, when you were working out, was that a happy time in your life? Were there positive effects to working out for you?
Yes. One thing was, especially like when I was running too, that gave me a lot of time to think, which can be bad and good because like you can fall into a bad thinking cycle and whatnot. But I think it's important to reflect a lot and to just... I think reflection is, I mean, I spend a lot of time doing it. I just think it's important to do. And I'm sorry, I'm drawing kind of a blank. I don't know what.
Well, you know what? You spend a lot of time in self-reflection is what you're talking about. You can spend too much time in self-reflection, I believe, and you get obsessed and you just sit there and marinate on. It depends. It depends on what you're thinking about.
Exactly.
You can spend a lot of time thinking about and planning your plan for the future and how you're going to navigate your life. And you think about what your goals are and why they are that, how you're going to achieve those things. Then you have a roadmap for life. Then you have a thing that you can ratchet onto. You know, you can have your rope with the little hooks on it and gunk, and you can really yank on that thing if it's good and sturdy and pull yourself through all the pain and all the stress and all. And you can pull yourself uphill, up a completely vertical building. You can keep pulling yourself to that through all the stuff, but first things first, you got to find that thing and hook onto it. And then also, working out is an exercise that's going to be so beneficial for you and your life and how you live and your quality of life, both psychologically and neurologically. Psychologically, because psychology is like the study of the patterns of the mind, how your mind works, the ways why you think what you think, thought patterns that have led to this type of thinking. And a thought pattern that is really, really beneficial for life is, if you do a thing that you don't want to do, it will make you better. You do a thing that you don't want to do that you know is good for you, and that's why you do it, and good things come from that, that is like the best thing you could teach yourself. And nothing teaches that better than working out. I mean, that can give you the concept, that can embed this concept deep in your brain that if you do the right thing, even though you don't want to do it, good things will happen. That is going to carry over into every aspect of your life. I mean, even like raising a family. Like, I really don't want to spank this kid, or I really don't want to get up early and make the kids breakfast, but I need to.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll reap the rewards for that.
Well, I want to say, too, like, I'm not just, I think some people think I like working out. I really don't, actually. Like, I mean, sometimes I like it, but for the most part, it sucks. I hate it, but I know it's worth it. So that's why I do it, you know, like, I know if I just stop, I'm going to, if you're not using it, you're going to lose it, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And then also on the neurological side of working out, it's like a bubble bath for your brain. I've heard an expert of the brain talk about this. I think they're an Alzheimer's and memory expert. And they talked about the number one way, and I've had an Alzheimer's expert professor on, or doctor on this show before, and they said, you got to move. You got to exercise. It's like a bubble bath for your brain. It's going to clear out all that what could become rust.
Mm.
And rust is, first of all, there's this big, huge headline thing that came out this year that said a lot of the stuff we thought we knew about Alzheimer's was fake. It was actually fake. And so we used to think it was a buildup. Alzheimer's was largely due to a buildup of amyloid plaque, mm-hmm. or something like that in your whatever, somewhere in the brain. And if you could break that up, you could perhaps alleviate the symptoms or get rid of Alzheimer's in general.
Mm-hmm.
That's just not true. Sadly, we just found that out this year, and they say that it sent us back 10 years.
Really?
Yeah.
Is there anything else they found out about?
They found that a Mediterranean diet. Oh, in this headline thing this year, I don't know much more about it. I only read a little bit.
Mm.
But some things that can help alleviate or fend off Alzheimer's, and I don't know how much of this was built on the foundation of this fake study, this like monumental study that we thought was true that just wasn't, about the amyloid plaque being the biggest contributor to Alzheimer's.
Mm-hmm.
But I've heard that a Mediterranean diet is really healthy, the berries, you know, and also weirdly keeping up on yourself, like your personal hygiene. Making sure you look good, taking pride in what you do. It just helps you from falling into the trap of laziness and sloth and depression even.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a question for you. Actually, I want to talk about this. Before we started recording, you said you don't really know what you think about mental illness. You think you might think about it in a different way than most of society does. And it seemed like a very bold statement. Can you repeat that statement? Or just tell me what you think about mental illness.
Yeah. So I was saying, like, I think mental illness is real, but I'm starting to wonder if maybe like medication and therapy, I wonder if maybe there's something better than that for us. And I also thought, you know, kind of like I said earlier, and we've mentioned a few of these cases where people have healed themselves just by using their minds. And so I wonder if it's possible to do that with mental disorders. Certainly not some that are neurodevelopmental, like something like ADHD. You can't just be like, oh, like I don't have this anymore, you know, and just imagine yourself. But if I had to, like things like just, I guess, think of like anxiety or I guess depression. Like I'm wondering often if I just tell myself positive things, if I can get out of that, or if maybe other people can. Because I found that like when I talk to myself a lot nicer, and I'm not like, I guess, repeating things other people have called me to myself and breaking myself down, like, When I talk nice to myself, I feel a lot better.
What do you mean
overall?
Talk nice to yourself? How do you talk to yourself, and what do you say, and how often do you say it? When do you say it?
Well, it's kind of like whenever I start to feel like I'm a failure, like I'll be like, you know what? No, I pretty much just tell myself the opposite of whatever bad thing I'm telling myself. Like if I'm beating myself up saying that I'm a failure because like I didn't do as good on a test as maybe I wanted to, like I'm not a failure just because I didn't do good on a test. Like I'm not a failure of a person just because, like I try to step outside of the box and look at everything, every possible angle to it. And I'm like, okay, you know, it's not so extreme, you know? Do you get what I'm saying, or am I just kind of all over the place?
No, I get what you're saying. Please keep going.
Okay. It's mostly just, kind of what I was saying earlier, like, if I start to feel like I'm ugly, I'll be like, you know, well, I can't just believe that I'm going to be this forever. Like, that's a sad way to live, to think you're just this ugly, hideous creature. And so believing that maybe I am a little bit better looking, has kind of helped me a little bit. And believing that I'm not a failure, believing I can do these things, even when I do fail, even when I do fail and stuff, like, I'm not going to beat myself up over those things. And I think just kind of coming back and being like, okay, you know what, you're really not these things. If you really look at everything in perspective, you're not this thing. This is just a blip in your entire life, and you can fix it. You can turn it around at any point in your life.
Wow, man. So is it difficult for you to fight against these intrusive, seemingly evil thoughts that come in and devalue your personhood? Is it difficult to fight against them and to say things that are contrary?
I mean, I guess I didn't really start doing this until kind of recently, but I've noticed it. Even if it is hard, I mean, I'll just keep telling myself, even if I have this feeling of like I'm feeling down or like I am these things, I'm going to keep telling myself that I'm not, because I'm going to believe in, I'm going to manifest it. And I think that's possible. I feel like we can do that with depression and anxiety. Like, I feel like if we change the way we think about things and we think more positively, I know that just sounds super simple and like too good to be true, but I literally think it's possible that could treat things. And if we could know for sure that would work, I think that would be a better treatment than taking medication or doing psychotherapy. It's more cost efficient. You know, that stuff's not cheap. Getting medication and therapy is not cheap. And I mean, it's literally free. If we can figure out how to use our minds to heal ourselves, like, that's pretty much the end of the medical industry, you know?
Which, exactly. It's the end of the medical industry. Yeah. Do you think that there's a lot of people that might not want that to happen?
I'm sure there are. But so what? So what if there are, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, what are they going to do, you know? I don't want to get too into conspiracy, because, like, I don't know for sure.
But that is one area, I think, that is fair to get conspiratorial about in your thinking. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, I look, Big Pharma wants money. That is perhaps one of the biggest downsides of this wonderful capitalist system, free market that we have in the United States, is that Big Pharma is too a capitalist. You know, and medicine is capitalist. They want to make as much money as they should in most any other industry that there is in the world, that there could be.
Mm-hmm.
Food, housing, design, mm-hmm. video production, podcasts. Like, you want to monetize this stuff, and you want to make as much money as you can. And usually when you make more money, it's a sign that you're doing good business and that people appreciate your product. Mm-hmm. Basically, when you make more money, it's people are applauding you, and that's how they applaud you. Good product, good service, good entertainment, good everything. Here's money. But when you do that, and this is, hey, you need this to save your life and to make your quality of life so a little bit better, so maybe you don't kill yourself. By the way, here's the price on it, and we're going to make it astronomically high. Mm-hmm. But don't worry, maybe your insurance will cover it. That's a weird system. Mm-hmm. And I think that it is corrupt at this point.
It's not fair.
It's not fair. It's well, it is fair under the laws and everything that we have right now. It's in the books. Yeah. They can do it, so they do it. It's just weird to me that they try that. Most of the commercials on TV, did you know this, are for medicine.
Really?
A humongous chunk, probably the majority of that, is antidepressant medication.
Mm-hmm.
If you feel like a cloud's over you, and it shows this lady all sad, and then it just shows a bunch of old lady at the soccer game, old lady laughing with these kids, says, get this, and then it quickly lists off the potential side effects, suicidal thoughts, itching, death. I mean, that's weird. I think it's corrupt. I think it's really bad. And I don't think – I think it's the worst industry that is legal right now. That's not true, abortion, but still.
Yeah.
It's really messed up that we sell this stuff.
Well, and there
the
are
– in the manner that we do.
There is one person, though, who's trying to kind of change the wave, I guess. That's Mark Cuban, and he made that service. Do you remember what it was called? It's
Mark Cuban. Oh yes, he just made.
It was a drug company.
Yeah, it's a very simple name, but he buys these pills wholesale and sells them at rates that he has a simple formula. It's like they charge double what they bought it for wholesale, which sounds like, hey, he's making a good buck off that, and then they make you pay for shipping. But actually, he says basically all this is if you buy it full price from him, it's like drugs.com or something like that. It's a very simple name. If you buy it from them, it's cheaper than the copay that you would pay via your with the assistance of your
insurance
for a drug that does the exact same thing. So it is the cheapest thing you could do. And he is flipping the whole medical industry on its head. It's really, really crazy. So, yeah, I have heard about that. I keep talking, but I'm going to look up what that's called.
Yeah. And I think another case of greed in the medical industry is if you look at the Sacklers, are you familiar with them at all?
No, and it's also called Cost Plus Drugs, costplusdrugs.com. But I'm not familiar with who you just said.
The Sacklers are the family who created the drug OxyContin. Which in the early 90s, they started prescribing in, I believe it was Virginia, and they were prescribing it in like to minors. I mean, not people like below the age of 18. I mean, literal minors, like people who were in mines because they had chronic pain, long-term chronic pain in their, usually in their backs and stuff. And they started prescribing these to them. And they were over-prescribed. Then they started to over-prescribe them. And people started getting addicted to them. And then people were dying on their starting dose. Like, literally, I heard cases of, like, old folks who would take their OxyContin prescribed dose for the first time, and they would overdose and die. It's an opioid. And eventually, when that became too expensive, people would switch to heroin. And they made billions and billions and billions of dollars off of this drug. And it's really sad. Like people were kind of pushing, like at first the drugs weren't, like they complained they weren't being prescribed enough. And so then they started to get prescribed more, like Purdue Pharma, which is the name of the Sacklers company that made OxyContin. They sent out like sales representatives to talk to doctors and to try to push the drug more on the patients, and it's really just terrible that they like. Where's their humanity at when they're making those decisions? You know?
Yeah, they're literally selling or they're sending out salespeople exactly like a knife company would sell out door-to-door knife salesmen. Go to these doctors and convince them that they should sell our drugs. They should prescribe this drug, and so people will take it and we'll get some money. It's weird when you're responsible for people's health and livelihood in such a way that medicine is.
And it's like, how much do you really care? You know, if you're I think it just so much of it is like you said earlier. Like it's so money oriented. It's like. And it's like, how do you get out of that? And I think Mark Cuban is like you said, flipping the industry on its head and kind of taking a step in that direction.
And also, doctors are incentivized to prescribe harsher medications rather than lifestyle changes like meditation, breathing, positive thinking, even. Mm-hmm. That's probably the wrong term to use, but they don't prescribe those things because they don't get any points for that, because they do have a quota to meet at the end of the year of how many types of – how many points you get. Say meditation's worth 0 points. Say ibuprofen or something. Some weak drug is worth 1 point. But something like Zoloft is worth 5, and you got to get to 100 by the end of the year. Or else, I don't know. But I believe that's the system that they operate under, and I would love to have a doctor on to tell me how they actually operate if that's incorrect. But I knew someone very well who was going to a medical school, Northwestern even, so a very good medical school, and they told me that's exactly how it works. So I'm going to go ahead and buy that.
I've seen evidence too of let me see. I've seen evidence of they're doing this same thing, not just with medicine, but with like certain surgeries. Like they're doing this. I saw specifically in a hospital in Tennessee. It's called Vanderbilt Hospital, and it was kind of exposed by Matt Walsh. They basically sent a journalist from the Daily Wire to this conference for doctors, and they had like a person come up and say, "Hey, you know, these surgeries that are for trans people, pretty much the transition surgeries and whatnot, are making clinics like sometimes $20,000 to $40,000, and sometimes clinics run exclusively just by doing those surgeries." And you know, I just.
These reconstructive surgeries for trans people where they're cutting off genitalia?
Yes. Yeah.
And breasts?
And in this hospital, they were doing it on minors. Now we're talking about actual kids, like under the age of 18. So
it just goes to show that just because there's medicine in the word, these are medical hospitals in the medical field, the medical industry, and you'd think doctors, right? They're portrayed as these beautiful, wonderful, and it's not like they're bad people innately, just like I wouldn't say cops are bad people, although they're being bad apples. But I think the industry and the philosophies on which they operate and the laws and legislations by which they live and operate and obey, I think those are weird. I think it's dangerous, and I think we have suffered a lot because of those laws and philosophies. It's very strange. The fact that there's even a hospital that's doing it, and then they stopped, right? Then they said we're not going to do those anymore. Is that correct? That
Vanderbilt hospital? Right after he posted the video of the lady saying, yeah, these surgeries make, you know, $20,000, and, you know, these are really good money makers, was literally her exact words.
Holy smokes.
It's called the money makers.
That's a whole other conversation.
After that, yeah, they had another journalist call the hospital and say, "Hey, I have my daughter and she's thinking about doing one of these surgeries, but she's only, I think they said 15, 16 years old." And they were like, "Hold on a second." And they came back like a minute later on the phone and they were like, "Yep, you're good. We can do that." It's like, "What?"
That's absurd. Parents, get your heads out of your butts. I mean, what in the world? Your kid, I can't stand this. I really believe in 3 years, 4 years, this is going to be a thing of the past. This whole transgender craze, it's absurd. It is not like when gay people came out of the closet finally and there's like a bubble and people reporting as gay. They're gay, whatever. This has surged. This surge in specifically young kids more than anyone else, especially young girls reporting as trans, has skyrocketed, and it no longer is a normal occurrence where people are finally coming out because they feel comfortable. It is a craze. It's a craze, just like wearing those wristbands were a craze, just like cutting yourself was a craze. Anorexia, bulimia were a craze among the same demographic, which is high school age and younger girls. They are the ones that fall for the craze. If you're a parent and you can't see that, then I think you're subscribing to an ideology that is just sacrificing your critical thinking and your rational thinking. No way you can look at this and say, yep, my daughter does know that she was actually supposed to be a boy and that she is actually a boy in a female body. If you agree with that, you're just being absurd and you're just being a liberal and you're trying to virtue signal. And say, look, I care. I'm a caring parent. I love my child. I'll let them do this. I know a doctor, dude, that his little freaking kid is like 12. And I tried to get him back on. He's been on the show before, and I won't out him by name because I don't know if people know who he is, but his kid is trans, and like I don't know if they're gonna have surgery, but I'm wondering if they will, because this doctor, he doesn't do surgeries. He's not a surgeon, but he's all about, you know, he's cool with giving the puberty blockers. It's saying it's just like pause button, perfectly fine. Are you absurd? Are you nuts? Mm-hmm. You think that's fine? You think that you can just do that to your body and all its insane complexity and inner mechanisms that work off of each other? Everything. No, you're not right in the head if you believe that. If you believe that you can just do that. And anyway, sorry, going on a tangent, but this is a crazy time we're living in with that stuff.
Well, I think we've gotten into a point now where I think conservative people have been too afraid to speak up on it for a long time. And I think it's been enabled in society a lot. Like, you know, you can be whatever you want to be. But you can't change your gender. You cannot, if you're a man, you cannot become a woman. If you're a woman, you can't become a man.
Well, you should say you can't change your sex. Because
sorry,
gender,
yeah, sex.
Look, I'm not even being one of those people, but yeah. Gender is literally a spectrum. Why? Because your gender is masculine and feminine. That is a spectrum. Just like you and I are varying degrees of masculine and feminine in different areas of our temperaments. Mm. I'm more masculine in my approach to struggle and facing adversity, but I'm more feminine in my desire to look good and be stylish. I'm more feminine in my emotional, how I show my emotions. I'm more masculine in other things, you know.
Right, but you're not saying I'm a girl.
No, but I'm more manly and more feminine. And you could say any point on the spectrum, like any combination of character attributes could come together in a way that you could call X, Y, or Z. It's silly to do. It's dumb. Mm-hmm. But gender is a spectrum. However, sex is not. And I might lose friends saying that. But it's the truth. I mean, just technically speaking, gender is not a binary thing. I sound crazy, but that's the truth. Sex is. And you shouldn't call people by their desired pronoun. And I mean, whatever, you do what you want, but this whole idea that that's good for them is not founded on anything.
Well, I think too, I think often the case is, like I heard Matt Walsh also talking about this, and he said, like, a lot of the times it's like, if a kid, like a younger kid, is like, oh, I want to be a girl, it's not because they actually want to be a girl. It's because they like things girls like to do. Like he said, his own son even likes to play with like girl dolls and stuff. He's like, but that doesn't make him a girl at his core. That doesn't make him a girl. He shouldn't become a girl because he likes girly things. Or he shouldn't identify as a girl because he likes girly things. And I think too, it's like a, kind of like I had posted on my Instagram story last week. It was a video of Joe Rogan. He said, you're giving them special treatment without any sort of special act. It's like you're getting this title that everybody has to call you, or they get canceled, or they get shunned. But nobody actually wants to call you that. It's everybody's just afraid to step out of the line, like step out of the...
That, and some people want to be perceived as virtuous without doing any of the real work. What's the easiest way to look virtuous? Well, you could either build a home for the homeless, or you could donate a whole lot of money. You could work really hard for the Salvation Army. You could go overseas and build a home in Haiti, or you could just say a thing.
Mm-hmm.
Men or women? Oh, no, no, no. If you believe you're a woman, you're a woman. That's it. Congratulations. You're right on par with the Haiti house builders. So that's crazy. But hey, man, we're running up on an hour right here.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see how things went in this first live episode of this kind where the ads ran at the beginning. But Tristan Garland, we'll have you on again, man. We'll do this again soon.
All right. Sounds good, man.
Thank you so much for coming on. And thank you, everyone, for listening to this episode of The Paul Garcia Show. Leave your thoughts in the comments below. God bless and have a great week. And Tristan Garland, you got anything to say?
Nope, that's it.
Nothing to the people, huh?
Thanks, guys, for watching. I appreciate it.
And that's a wrap.